Good morning, good morning. We are dancing in with Soul Mikasa, Mano Dibango. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, right here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1, with your Friday Speak Up Show. And we got a treat in store for you. Today, we are having the seventh of our pop-up poetry, something that we started at the beginning of the year and people have clamored and enjoyed it so much, we're doing it again today just for you. The pop-up poetry is something that doesn't have, it's short notice. Poets don't have forever to create something. There is a prompt and people present on a round robin, kind of in the order that they came in. And we have a thing called R-I-I-F-F, riff. Doesn't mean something rough is done to you. It's respectful, informative, interesting, friendly feedback. So we will hear that one or two people will do it, and then we'll move on to the next poet. And each person will briefly introduce themselves. They'll do their poem. One or two people from our audience will give riff, and we'll move on to the next person. So I'm going to start us off with a poem, because we have a pretty amazing life that we're living. Living the so amazing life, living without strife, living the so amazing life, exuding hope in perpetuity, facing old foes with new fortitude and forgiveness, awakened to unlimited possibilities, crafted from rearranged abilities, connecting dots left dangling, weaving the yarn without tangling, living the so amazing life, open-eyed dreaming in ocean breezes, soaring with Gerald Albright, kicking it with Kirk Whalum, loving every moment above the dirt. Living the so amazing life, speaking up, sharing out, enlightened words, specialized verbs, raising the bar higher, nudging fledgling eagles to fly. Living the so amazing life, elegantly emerging from strife, basking in orchid lined wedding chambers, casting away fears, de-escalating dangers. Living the so amazing life, making vows etched from mother of pearl, blissfully exchanged without hesitation, finding comfort and joy already set, glancing out our southerly windows, catching the purples and golden sunsets, basking in abundance easily met, clothing customed for comfort and style, living the so amazing life, leases signed, actualizing dreams, no stress regarding the address, islands of technology, whining and entwining, living the so amazing life, broadcasting, broadcasting, love outswirling, eternal hope is in the wind, custom change rooms, saunas and swimming pools, emissaries of hospitality gracing every room, joyfully embellishing the dream-centered spaces, living the so amazing life, days with one, enhanced by one, welcoming company as warranted, ever expanded and exporting premises, driving alert and authentically attuned, delivering promises and commitments anywhere, everywhere, under the moon. From the collection Soaring in the 70s. Okay, so I'll be the first one to be the guinea pig for you. One or two people, if you want to provide some riff. Cynthia?
I love the way that you read. I love how your voice is another layer to the poem and so inspirational. Thank you for your reading and your words.
Oh, thank you, Cynthia. Okay. I think the first person that came on, Neil Ryan, is someone that has been a part of our pop-up poetry or poetry pop-ups before and had the experience of writing a book and believing in it so much he drove across the country and sold it from places like Seawalls. So briefly introduce yourself and present the poem you're going to do, the first poem you're going to do today.
Hello, good morning or good afternoon or good evening, wherever you are. I was a pretend businessman for half a century, And when I retired, I said, what am I going to do with the second half of my life? At that time, I was 75, so I'm on my way to 150 and still writing poems. And after that beautiful poem that you just introduced, I'm going to have to go looking for a different poem because this one, oh no, I'll go for
Go
it.
for
I love, you took the words out of my mouth, and that is that I live in paradise. I live in Nanaimo, British Columbia, which is a 35, 40,000 fishing village, and I live less than half a kilometer from a park with two lakes. So there's where my exercise is. And I'm no longer 75. I'm now 84. And I've been invited by UBC to join their program on how to keep mobile and be old. So I'm an old guy. But I wrote an interesting poem that I kind of contradict what the beauty that you referred to in your poem, Charlotte, but I'm going to read it anyway. We are all blind sailors. We sail into oblivion, ever experiencing loss, exchanging innocence for experience, trading sweet youth for age, and choosing for the warmth of companionship at the cost of independence. As we sail into the storms of life, the lust for that adventure will wane, giving up the joy of youthful optimism for the cynicism of adulthood. Eventually, to barter away our enthusiastic passion for life for the quiet comfort of the evening fire. Ever moving through time, we blindly sail into this sea of illusion. And to learn to be comfortable with life's continual reimagining, we must become comfortable with our continually letting go of dreams and intentions. For little by little, or maybe all at once, life will take them all away. Because we use the coin of entropy to purchase passage on this voyage, there is nothing we can keep. Nothing is for certain. Nothing is forever. And we sail not into the beauty of a cloudless evening sunset, indeed, into the storms of old age, sickness, and death. But there is a life to be led, experiences to have, people to meet, and at the top of the list is moving on, always moving on to the next adventure. Thank you.
Always moving on to the next adventure. Janice, would you like to give some riff to Neil?
We are all blind sailors. I fell off my chair. Yes. I think that when you catch us like that on the first line, we become a part of the rhythm of what you're saying. So I always enjoy the fact that I expect which way you're going and you don't go there. That's, to me, that's what a poet should do. That's what a poem should do. And so that it can weave something for you to deal with, and each one of us deal with it in a different way. But I was just loving that first line. I'm going to probably steal that, so hang on. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Janice. Thank you. And it's nice to see you again.
To see you too.
Would anyone else like to give riff to Neil?
Yes, I would. I had to turn off the air conditioning because it was roaring like a jet engine. Yes, the last part of that just really hit something for me, that as we continue to adventure, we're sailing into the storms of getting older. Wow. Did I relate to that? And yet there was such a wonderful, optimistic note at the same time that you're saying, yeah, we're going to ride these storms, but there are all this other stuff happening too. And that's good. So yes, it's gave me a lot of encouragement today. Thank you.
Yes, I found that very upbeat and encouraging. Cynthia was another of the people coming early to our line last week. Cynthia Sharp sharpened us up with wonderful poetry and examples of something she's going to be presenting Friday live in Vancouver. Cynthia, introduce yourself briefly. And Cynthia invited a couple of people who I'll have you introduce as you. Well, first, we're going to hear your poem.
Okay, so thank you, Charlotte, for having us all here. So I'm Cynthia Sharp, and I'm going to be reading from my new book, Ordinary Light, which is in the Burnaby Public Library and the Vancouver Public Library and libraries through Canada. Thanks to Honey Novick, it might be in the Toronto Library coming soon. And I'm going to read my reasonably short poem. And I'm just so grateful that Diana Hayes and Adrian Guybrison and Honey Novick were able to come, people I invited. So Charlotte said flashy. I think one of my flashy poems in Ordinary Light is Sisters of the Meadow, which is ironic because Ordinary Light is celebrating all the beautiful small things. But one of the beautiful small things I like to celebrate, or one of the beautiful big things I like to celebrate, is Jilly Watson's art. She's from Bowen Island and she paints beautifully. And I fell in love with her work. So I wrote this poem to one of her winter paintings. And it was a poem. She paints the BC landscapes and she went on a hike and it painted these beautiful little trees. And to me, they felt like teen girls being safe in the world. And so I called my poem Sisters of the Meadow. Winter bursts forth fairy saplings, sisters of the meadow, magical and raw at once. Pristine pine tweens dancing safely. Persimmon and pistachio, holiday tinsel, adorning their natural environment, roots intact, allowed the depth of their beauty, incantations of blue in the stillness of frozen lakes, quietly into their core, like the brave red fringe of wildflowers, the undefined graciousness of being. So thank you for listening. That's for everyone who, instead of getting a Christmas tree and putting it into your living room, just decorates one outside or allows them to be present to where they are. Thank you for the opportunity to share that.
Thank you. That is beautiful. Who would like to give some riff to Cynthia? Adrian.
Oh, hello, everyone. Cynthia, it's been so long. I just love how you intermingle the essence of nature with these concrete experiences and personify it into something greater than just one thing or the other.
Oh, thank you so much.
Okay, Janice?
No, I was...
Oh, you were waving.
Agreeing. I went last time. Someone else should speak.
I can give some feedback. I loved how... Well, this is an ekphrastic poem, isn't it, Cynthia? So you begin with the painting and how you're able to paint with words so precise and so evocative. I felt like I was in the painting and in the trees, and I love the atmosphere that you brought me into. And of course, I love nature poems, so it was really lovely. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That means so much, Diana.
Oh.
Yeah, I get to introduce Diana Hay. So it means so much to me to get feedback from Diana Hay, who was the first prize winner in a contest, the North Shore Writers Contest that I recently judged. So Diana Hay from Salt Spring Island, author of many beautiful books and owner of Raven Chapbooks, founder and owner of Raven Chapbooks, is the next reader.
Thank you. Cynthia, and just a little plug for Raven. We're going to be opening our annual poetry contest in September, and all poets, emerging and established, all poets in BC are welcome to submit. So I'd love to see your manuscripts. So when I saw the prompt, flashy moments, I realized I don't have a lot of really flashy poems. I write a lot about nature and personal relationships. I've explored grief in this last book, but I have one poem that depicts the character of the trickster, Mr. Raven. And of course, ravens love flashy objects, including keys and earrings. So I'll read that poem for you. And it's called Raven and My Tourmaline Earring. Ancient bird, jaunty with two-footed hops, moxie galore, makes off with my tourmaline earring, the one that belongs on my left ear. And if you want to believe the paradigms of gemology, you should first know how the world cooks up toxic waste, liver and blood, spreads edema, ankles and feet, sparks metal ions, prosthetics lying in wait. This semi-precious stone will give you a leg up, the mountain scree, never cramping your free fall. Lucky raven chortling, his booty all razzle and shine, will flare your libido, warble for his solo mate, just in time to swoop and roll, clear out the beach stash, all those tourists dropping talismans in sand, maybe a diamond in a shallow grave. I think our king of Corvid remembers all our moves, face recognition, he covets amethyst from my locket, has an eye for polished silver, rehearses his struts with every croak and caw, then clicks like a mystery clock, lurking in branches, whistles me to move along, pleased with my good taste in earrings. Once I set my keys on a flat rock on a west-blown beach, the middle of winter, left in clear sight, I was determined to get the best and last of the surf before night, my camera eyeing the wilderness. It was time to tempt the sea, breathe without gills or goggles. I returned to my rock and no keys. No keys. Clever Mr. Guardian Thief Raven teaches me to slow down, hitch a lucky ride back to town, turn and toss in a single bed, tangled up in shadow down, eyes of obsidian, a fine master of time. I am awake now, one tourmaline dream, brush of black wings nudging my ascent. See the bird passing through a cloak of trees, out past dawn, all luster, keys and earring tucked in his craw. Go ahead, bird, fly away. Remember my dream. You will know me by tourmaline when you come back for more.
Oh my goodness, I feel like I've been to the movies. You wrote a script. Oh, I'd never pictured a crow doing all of those things. And there was so much detail in the earrings and the keys. I mean, you've given us all a warning. If you go to the beach, keep your keys in your pocket or in a case. Oh, thank you. That was wonderful.
I should mention that this is actually based on a true story. I truly lost my keys on that beach, and it had to have been the raven.
Mm-hmm. Would someone else like to give some riff?
I really love the fact that I was a little bit in suspense for a while. It's the foreshadowing of you need your key on the rock. but it was such a surprise to hear who the thief was. It was really, really nice.
Yeah, and it made me think that you must spend a lot of time observing, because to notice all those things, I noticed the crow in the tree next door. He just wakes up at 4 a.m. and starts making this noise. Maybe he's telling his other night creatures, I've got stuff over here, you want to divide it up. But it just really is, it was beautiful, but it reflects so much research and just paying attention in nature. Let's see, this morning, if you're just joining us, this is Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon, where we and my guest and I speak up about things so that you can listen up and act upon what you have heard. You have poetry that acknowledges our need to take care of nature. We play music by artists, independents, give an opportunity often for writers and musicians to talk about their project, their passion, and their any causes they're working with. So if you're not on this particular day or time, you can contact us, send an email to me. I am Sister, because I am Sister C. I am Sister C at gmail.com, and we can work on scheduling you to take part in our regular programs. So we're going to continue on with this event that we started called Poetry Pop-Ups. Cynthia, would you like to introduce the other person that you invited?
I've got two more people. So we'll start with Adrian Guyberson, who's an amazing artist as well as a talented writer. We graduated together from the Simon Fraser University Writer Studio. She's also done a lot of service volunteering. She was on the board of directors for the Federation of BC Writers and just a wonderful human being. I'm so grateful she's here to share work.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I've been, my muses have been on holiday for a while, and I haven't been writing much lately, and I haven't been making much art either, so this was a real nice prompt to pick up my pen again and get some words down. I had been reading Pale Shadows from Dominique Fortier. It's actually a translation by Rhonda Mullins, and it's about the works of Emily Dickinson after her death, about how they found this bunch of poetry and how her family began to consolidate it into the works that we finally got to see in the world. And the writing is just phenomenally beautiful, and reading it inspired me. There's a little quote from Emily Dickinson that said, I see thee better in the dark. I do not need a light. And flashy moments kind of correlated to me with this quote. And so I wrote a poem that I call Anahata. And it's a draft. So it's definitely a new, I haven't even really finalized it, but I thought I'd share it anyways. So there are constellations at the bottom of my cup, faces in the foamed milk that float on a sea of dark espresso, amalgamation of all my parts, anahata, the coming together of two parts, unhurt, unstruck, and unbeaten, gateway to the celestial realm, soundless. Its twin beats at the center of my ribcage, the reliable drum holding balance over being and nothingness. In the vortex of my heart, there is a large black hole so dense, it wills me to disappear into its center, ripped apart by the force of its nature, to collapse into myself and lose my light. Is this annihilation or liberation? Unmanifest spirit waiting its next point of light. That's all. It's short.
Good question. Honey, would you like to give some feedback?
I like it. From a description of something very concrete, looking into the vortex of your cup of coffee. And from that, went into different depths and dimensions. Thank you. Yes, I understand the feeling. So thank you for writing.
Imagination, the vortex. I mentioned, I'm picturing the cup of coffee and the vortex going on in it. And do you drink it? Do you observe it? Do you pray about it? It's such a beautiful set of words.
I noticed, it's Neil, I noticed the cup of coffee as well. I thought that was brilliant. But I would like to comment on one thing only, and that is, you said the poem was only a draft. In my experience, every poem is only a draft. You come back to it 5 years later, you're a different person. And so you see the world from the new person's perspective. So I've had that experience very recently, that every poem and every writing is only a draft.
This is true. Thank you for that reminder.
Thank you for that poem.
Elizabeth, you've given comments about a couple of people. So you were one of the early people on the line. Do you want to share what you have written?
I'm not sure, because I did not write the poem. I haven't. What I had written was an epilogue to a playlet. It was on the prodigal son, where the father was so happy to see the son and wanted to celebrate and give him good clothes to wear and all that. And the older son, who had been home all the time, was angry and did not want to participate and felt that was wrong. In my playlet, I inserted the role of the mother, and the mother observes that even in the joy of the returning son, it's torn the family apart. And a lot of it had to do with forgiveness and that. So we had some discussion about it. With your indulgence, this is not a poem, it's prose, and it's in theatrical dialogue. I could read it if that's okay.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. This is the mother speaking. It's the epilogue to the return of the son. Yes, both of my sons learned well. They are both good men. My eldest son is particularly very fair and just, almost too just. An eye for an eye, a lie for a lie. I know he loves his brother deep down. But his sense of justice says the younger brother's done wrong. He squanders all that father gave him. He said to me, there's no more here for him. Yes, he's still his father's son, but he owns nothing here. When father passes, everything here is going to be mine, for I was the one who helped to grow this estate when this younger kid was out playing around, using up all his inheritance. My younger baby was repentant. He knew he made some grievous mistakes. He felt very lowly and undeserving. Even when my husband gave him the best robe and ruby ring to wear, after the feast and some good rest, he returned them to his father. And wearing sackcloth and ash on his hair, he said to my husband, in front of his brother, Father, I am not worthy to be called your son. I will toil in the fields with the hired servants. I will sleep and live with them if you will let me. I know I have done wrong. I have sinned against you and others. When I was in the other land, picking up slop to feed the takes, running into people I used to know, but who didn't want to know me anymore, they shamed me. And I have caused worry to you and to my brother and the family that I have brought you grief. And I know that I don't owe anything here, and everything will go to my brother. At that, my older son jumped in with anger that we had never seen. You're damn right. You own nothing here. For you spent all you've got. You left me alone here with all my all by myself while you are out gallivanting and spending all that we have worked so hard for. You say it's your inheritance, but it was our hard work, and you have no more inheritance. Then the older child, the just one, stormed out. What he said was true. My heart aches for both of them. Then my husband said,